and Ron Heron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Tess Rabin and Emily Blumberg, who is in Washington, D.C., co-directors of First S. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you so much.
So, thank you for having us.
So what? Tell us what First Ask is. You're not going to ask me for money, are you?
Definitely. We're definitely going to ask you for money.
So what is First Ask?
Yeah, so First Ask, very simply, we recruit women to run for office at the state and local level. So we work up to state senate and as locally as city council, county commissioner. And we keep it simple because what we're after is the intentional recruitment of women to run for office. This is really a place that we saw a need. And so we're doing this through community recruitment. We really want to talk to people who live in a community and see from them who should run for office. We're across the country, and it's important to us that it's always community-based because really that's where the support is for women, and that's the sort of the tipping point that we've seen to convince them to run. So we're in many states doing this, and we are really excited about the changes in state legislatures that we're seeing, closing the gender gap, and really building a bench of women to run for office.
And Emily's list is different in that it is talking about women that already have made the decision. Is that how I could differentiate your group from Emily's list?
Right. So what we do is we do the recruitment part of that. Emily's list is amazing for training the women, making sure that they are set up for success to win. What we want to do is go into communities to make sure that more women are actually taking the leap and running. So then we get to partner with Emily's list and say, hey, we have this amazing group of women who are now running all over the country. Let's do our best to support them and make sure that they win their elections.
The New York Times must have known that you were going to be on because their featured article in their magazine on Sunday was Mom is Running for Office. Did you see this article?
I didn't. I heard about it, though.
And it's just a couple of things that I thought was really interesting. It said a few women with very young children have decided to run, even though research suggests that voters can be uneasy when female candidates run with young children. This is double standard, isn't there? That if someone is a mother, it's not necessarily a positive, particularly to other women.
Definitely. It's really crazy, that stigma. I worked for Kathy Tran in Virginia. She has four young kids, and I think it made her an even better candidate because not only was she able to multitask like a champion, but she understood what it took to have a good school. She was on the PTA. She had this kind of wealth of experience, and being a mom was a huge bonus to her being elected to state delegate.
And, you know, if you look at the Me Too phenomenon, it sometimes pushes out some of the other issues that women have. I just saw this morning in the newspaper a discussion about the airplane whose engine was lost yesterday, and unfortunately one of the passengers was killed. And they were talking about how amazing the pilot was, particularly because she was a woman. Now, that would never be the case if it was a man pilot. They would just say he's an amazing pilot. But they said it's amazing that this woman, she had so much courage and she didn't lose her cool, which is, I guess, code word for she didn't get emotional. And so there's this, you know, there's so many things that subtly are probably hindering women considering getting themselves into the public fray?
Absolutely. Emily and I were just actually talking about how much scrutiny Hillary Clinton and Cecile Richards were under when they went before Congress. People talked about the way they dressed, their general demeanor, and that same rhetoric isn't used for men. Women are just scrutinized in a different way, and I think, using the pilot example is perfect. Who cares if she was a woman? She did a great job and she did the best that she could and she stayed calm under pressure, which is what she was supposed to do. It had nothing to do with what was between her legs.
Is the reason that your partnership has been so successful is Emily is 3,000 miles away?
Yes, that's definitely a part of it. We actually used to be roommates and we joke now that we talk to each other more now that we're on different coasts. To do that. But actually, I think it helps us have this perspective of being in a number of different states and being able to communicate over a lot of different time zones, especially when we're talking to candidates and they'll say, is it too early? Is it too late? We're like, no, we're on every time zone you could possibly want.
And this is or going to be a not-for-profit?
It is a not-for-profit. It's a C4 organization. So we're a political nonprofit.
Which means that you can or cannot deduct a donation?
You cannot deduct it.
Okay. But it's worth doing. Isn't that correct?
It is worth absolutely every penny.
And do you have a website yet?
We do. It's firstask.org.
Okay. So hopefully after the show, you're going to be inundated with donations.
Oh, we definitely will be. I expect it.
Right. Right. And with the new tax law, we don't care about donations anyway. People in California don't get donations, which is another reason we ought to find some new people to run for office. So explain to me, and I we're trying to be as nonpartisan as we can, but explain to me why during the presidential election so many women, particularly white women, were not put off by some of the things we learned about the president. About his misogyny, about how he talked about women, how he treated women, particularly, women with daughters. What is there some disconnect?
It's this is a funny question. I'm smiling, which of course no one can see. I had this exact conversation with my dad shortly after the election. He really couldn't fathom. And I hope he won't be embarrassed by this, but he couldn't fathom why women would support Trump. And I kind of threw that back to him and said, well, I can't imagine why men would support Trump, because they exist in the world and they know women or they're related to women or what have you, and it affects their lives or someone they know almost equally. And I think I would say a couple of things. One, we did see a lot of disgust in people who were not otherwise motivated or involved in campaigns. And that was across the board, no matter what, party you associate with. And, hindsight's 2020, we can absolutely see that we all needed to either do more or show up more. And there were a lot of other factors, but we really saw the reaction to this after the election and the involvement of women in so many different, whether it's grassroots organizations, demonstrations, marches, that absolutely crossed party lines, that really there was this outcry that we as women want to be heard more, not we as Democratic women, we as Republican women, but we as women absolutely need to be heard and need to be involved more in the electoral process. And from that, we've really seen women stepping up. I mean, to your point, women stepping up to run for office, women stepping up to support other women running for office. The amount of people that we've seen across party aisles get out to the voting polls since the 2016 election, I think really speaks to how many people really were affected by it. And I think sort of sorting out 2016, we can't quite point to one thing, and I think we saw what was a normal trend in elections anyway, where white women were really not getting the message very well, and hopefully what we're seeing now is much more of seeing, especially what women of color have always seen and always participated, and the work that they've always done. We owe an enormous debt to women of color who have always shown up, and what we're hoping and that we're seeing in 2017 and beyond, and now in 2018, is that white women are really sort of following that trend.
The name First Ask, which is a catchy name, is that was that chosen because you're the first person to ask someone to run for office, or what is the actual history behind choosing that name?
It's a great question. So there were a lot of names tossed around. There was a consideration to how few women are in federal office, and particularly with our thoughts about creating a bench of women so that women continue to run for office, there was this staggering number of 46 total women have ever been elected, so we toyed around with that. But what really hit us, and when you kind of pick apart First and Ask, is this: women have to be asked 7 times to run for office, and men don't. Men are actually pretty much raised to say, when you feel like it, you're up, you can run, let's go. Women were told to wait our turn, and we're never told when that turn is. And so when the name First Ask was kind of thrown out there, it's this idea that it's the first of 7, and we're here to make all 7 of those. We're here to partner with other people to help in those 7. And then the ask is really important to us. It's the intentional telling women, it is your turn, you are the right person for it, someone else isn't going to be better, you are, and we want you to. So it's really the pairing of, you know, it's not the ask, right? It's the first ask. And, you know, we're here for that whole process and the intentionality behind it.
Well, now you're making me feel bad because I've never been asked.
Cass, you want to take this one?
I feel kind of like I've been left out. Is it too late? Do you think anyone's going to ask me? Okay, thank you. That was Lisa, that was Lisa, our producer. Well, maybe when we come back, someone will ask me. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a 4-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a 4-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tess Rabin and Emily Blumberg, co-directors of First Ask. And one thing I didn't ask is, I'm assuming that you have a preference of which party you're attracting female candidates to run for.
So the way we look at it is, we want pro-choice women to run for office. That's our criteria. Usually that falls one into one party, but that's our criteria for women.
So right now there's a debate going on in the Democratic Party about how far left should they go. And there's some fear among some political pundits that if the party becomes too progressive, they're going to lose the center. And these elections are decided by the center, by the independents. And so how do you avoid the risk of finding someone a little bit too extreme for the mainstream, or do you?
We look for the best woman to fit the bill. And what that looks like is going into communities and asking around and saying, who is someone, who is a woman who should be running for office? And you know, how do we get her to run?
That's specific to that area.
Specific to that area, exactly. So, you know, we're not looking at maybe the bigger national picture, but really want to focus on who should be representing the people in this specific community. And does this person hold the same values as the people they should be representing?
Okay, so you have in most places a party system where the party typically likes to control the candidates. Do you have an issue where you come into a community and there's some pushback from the party leaders saying, you know, get off our turf? You know, we don't need you or we don't want you. We want to pick who we want to pick.
So we've actually worked really closely with the Democratic parties in various areas, and they've been nothing but amazing and accommodating, and because we want to be a resource for them. You know, there's some places with hundreds of districts, and it's really hard for that one Democratic party to find someone to run in each of these districts. So we come in and we say, hey, we want to help with this. We want to be a resource for you. And, you know, while we're at it, let's put a woman in the office. So we partner with them in a really, really intentional way.
And Emily, because you're in D.C., do you spend more time on national candidates?
It's a great question. Yes. Well, so we actually are only statewide, but we focus in every state. And my specific focus is on the recruitment side of things. So just to test this point, we'll call a state party. We really want to talk to the legislative caucus within each party. If we get an understanding of sort of the national idea of what state legislatures can be flipped or things like that, we really want to take that into account. But, you know, we're not recruiting at the federal level. And again, this really also sort of comes down to looking for maybe not the most traditional candidate, because women are just not traditional candidates, and finding a way to help build this bench so that one day they will be federal, you know, candidates and federal office holders.
One of the statistics that really surprised me that I received for preparation for the show is that the USA is ranked 104th in the world in countries represented by women in the national legislature. And if you think about the narrative that we've all been taught, that we're the most friendly nation to women, and we accept, and we know other countries, you know, India and China, and you know, are much more chauvinistic, and but yet the macro numbers don't seem to show that.
Yeah, when we saw that number, we were both astounded and also not surprised, which of course contradict one another. But we, you know, we see this a lot in a lot of different issues, that we pressure countries to be better on the environment while we ourselves don't. We pressure other countries certainly to be better on women's rights, and we haven't, I'll say, quote-unquote, perfected that. I think when you look at the incredible organizations that have continued to work toward women's rights, we're certainly making progress, albeit incremental. And the funny part of this, and the reason we're not surprised, is like, yeah, we'd be better on these issues if we had more women in office. And so what this really sort of comes down to is there are many reasons that contribute to this number, especially when you look at the intersection of race, geography, income, things like that. There are so many deeper reasons, and the numbers, you know, change, especially in race and things like that. But what we really are seeing is that we can make this difference when we do it really incrementally. It has been done. We've seen it done. And that's what we're here to do, is to make that number better, especially so when we're talking about this. And we should continue, of course, to talk about this internationally. But, yeah, we're not totally surprised by it, just with the way that we kind of say, just wait on, you know, wait a second, we'll take care of this elsewhere. But you wait your turn, and so we're really here to sort of flip that.
And how difficult is the gerrymandering problem? Is that so structurally in the way of change that it doesn't matter who is put up, it's going to be very difficult to win?
Yes, and that actually speaks to another statistic of ours. Women have just as good a chance of men at winning when they run for office. So if, you know, a seat is a toss-up, it's a toss-up no matter who's running. They're not marking it a toss-up based on man or woman. So we're seeing that when you gerrymander, that is not only inhibiting the, you know, sort of equal representation that there should be, but it's inhibiting women from getting into those seats as well. So this is a huge problem that we've thought a lot about. We've looked at some of the districts that candidates we've worked in, and they look a little crazy. I mean, they don't look like the way they should, and it makes it more difficult to win office.
In 1860, and I know both of you went to school in Boston, Henry Thoreau, when he was passing through, commented that America's one problem is the education of the electorate. If you have a true democracy, then you're going to have to make sure that the electorate is up to the task. And there are voting habits that seem inexplicable. I mean, the people either are voting against their own interests because of a single issue that they believe is so important, or they just don't understand what's happening. So how can you get a message across when you have the obstacle of having, in many cases, you know, a Fox News educated voter?
Trying to get a message across, I think that's one of the Democratic Party's biggest issues right now. It's figuring out how to communicate the message. So, you know, what we do is kind of going back to the basics, going back to the community. We had two of our candidates had a pizza and politics potluck just this weekend, where they sat down and they wanted to talk to their community members and say, okay, what do you need? You know, how can I be the best civil servant I can be? I think the biggest focus of all of our candidates is they want to talk to their community, and they want to make sure that they are the correct person for this job. And these women have PhDs and master's degrees and have been in the Peace Corps, and, you know, they are immensely qualified, but their biggest concern is, can I take what my community is saying to me and make action out of it?
And do you teach or help to direct them into places where they can learn how to speak on television, how to make their public speaking more effective? In other words, is there coaching that takes place, not just recruitment?
We connect them with resources that do trainings, that have incredible trainings that are available for things like that. And the biggest thing that we encourage them to do is to practice what, you know, quote unquote, stump speech, and really talk to people and do that this sort of listening tour. I mean, the interesting thing when you sort of look at being polished or not polished, we actually saw a huge appreciation for the more unpolished candidate. And so it's not that we're, you know, encouraging them one way or another, but it's sort of interesting to really see, especially their intention on, you know, hearing from voters and then telling their personal story about why they're running, how they got involved, and how their background's going to contribute to that. It is this real talk that is really appealing to voters these days. And we're encouraging them to talk to their teams and really practice those things. Because the other part is, when you think about messaging and you think about national messaging, that has to be obviously really, really, really polished because it's going on TV all the time and things like that. But it's, you know, important in your own community to also really speak to that community and how they're going to want to hear from you. And oftentimes they might know who these women are, especially since we want a community to support them. So, you know, I guess the short answer of this is we don't want them to be too polished.
And how do you argue to a potential candidate who says, I don't want to put my family through this. I don't want to put myself through this. It's a nasty, nasty business. And I would suspect that anyone with a little more sensitivity than just a bull in a china shop would really think twice about running for office because the process is so debilitating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. And you hit on, I think, a main concern that we've heard. And I think it's really important. We think it's really important not to try and say that doesn't exist. We've heard people try and, like, convince people to run saying, oh, no, it'll be great. And it's like, no, like, it will be difficult. And this is a big reason why we say, please talk to your family, like, see what they think. We found that children are really supportive, spouses are really supportive, and in fact, that actually often encourages them more. We have an awesome candidate, Chris Geis, and she was like, I asked my husband, and he's like, let's go get signatures. And that was like the straw that broke the camel's back and made her run. But the other part of this and the thing we said, and this is true, is there has been enormous excitement around positive campaigns in a way that I think is pretty new. People are tired of hearing, I'm running against so-and-so, but they're really excited about hearing, I'm running, and here's why I'm running. It's not against one person or another. It's not against one party or another. It's, I'm running because I care about these issues, and this is why I want to run. And it's really allowed them to have more positive campaigns and sort of rise above it. And with that kind of, not avoid, but sort of really discourage the negative campaigning.
You know, one of the things I heard from someone who I really respect in the political system is that one of the problems that a lot of presidential candidates have, and it becomes evident during debates, is they don't know why they're running. In order to be successful as a candidate, you really have to have a sense of what it is you want to accomplish. If you're just running because you think it's a good idea or you want the power, it actually comes through. So, you know, someone has to have an issue that really resonates with them before they can make it exciting to the people who are listening to them. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tess Rabin and Emily Blumberg, co-directors of First Ask. And we're talking about the political process today and women and how to get more women involved. Let me ask a question by just saying one word, Twitter. So, you know, we have a new world now.
Yes, we definitely do. Social media has taken politics by storm, I would say. You know, I think Emily and I both have a love-hate relationship with Twitter. It is an extremely effective tool to use, especially with these grassroots campaigns, because everybody is their own communications director. You can really get the word out in your own words all the time, every second. The thing we try and teach our candidates and guide them is to use it to tell a story. We really want to use this amazing tool that is Twitter, that is Instagram, that is Snapchat, that is all these things, is Facebook, so that they can tell a holistic story of their campaign. What is it like to go and knock on doors? What is it like to, be at a meet and greet? What is it like to make phone calls? And so that it kind of brings people who maybe are, you know, on edge about going out and canvassing. It brings them into the fold and shows them that this is not a scary thing. It's actually fun and exciting.
You left out one thing. What's it like to ask for money? And that's really hard.
It is. It is. It's a huge learning curve. I think that a lot of our candidates are starting to kind of go over the hump. I know for me and Emily, you know, our background is in organizing. So we are used to going into communities and asking people for time. And time is a really, really valuable commodity. So for me personally, asking for money is so much easier than asking for time. So I'm trying to work with the candidates to make sure that they understand that, you know, fortunately, unfortunately, everyone needs money to run an effective campaign. And the best people to ask for money are the people who already love you and support you and want to lift you up.
So Tess and Emily, this is radio, not television. And probably most people listening will think that they're about 60 years old. They're not. They're very young. And how did you – let's step back. What for young adults, you're so dedicated to making change. What got you motivated?
You know, for me, the first time I got really involved in politics, I worked on Elizabeth Warren's campaign when I was in college in Boston, and I heard her speak. And I think, you know, anybody who's heard Elizabeth Warren speak, you get enamored. She's so smart and brilliant, and I wanted to be a part of that movement. And so I jumped on in any way I could, which was registering kids to vote on college campuses. So I went around Boston and I registered anybody I could to vote. I stood on street corners, yelled outside of grocery stores, because I wanted people to participate. And then, you know, you see change happen. Boston, at least, is mostly students, mostly people under 30 who are the voting population within the city. So after Elizabeth Warren's campaign, I wanted to keep getting involved and worked with Rock the Vote, and then went on to work with the ACLU on voting rights, because that was really what got me motivated is participation.
And Emily, what got you motivated?
Yeah, so I'm originally from the Chicago suburbs. So I was a Barack Obama girl. I was so excited about him. My mom actually and a friend of hers took a few of my friends up canvassing in Germantown, Wisconsin. I believe that's in Paul Ryan's district, soon to not be Paul Ryan's district. This is exciting. And we walked into a campaign office and they handed us what I now know is a walk packet. And said, go talk to these people. And I was terrified. And I had a great time with my friend. I fell in love with organizing and knocking doors. And anyone who knows me listening to this will know that that love is not lost. I still would rather knock doors than anything else. So I credit him with my love for organizing. And I had a conversation with a woman when you kind of talk about young people. A woman at the door, and she was like, I'm not voting. My vote doesn't matter. I couldn't care less about what's going on. And I looked at her and I said, I'm not a voting age, but I'm out here because your vote represents me. And I would really, you know, I hope that you support Barack Obama. And I suppose I don't know, but I had a good feeling about our conversation. And it's funny because I tell that story is how I get involved, but my mom is really involved in things in the community. She was on a CTO. She is currently helping a nursery school get funding, a community nursery school, so that they can stay afloat and go to a space where they can accommodate everyone. My dad's on the city council, so I also have an appreciation for really local politics. And I think when we think about how we got involved here, you know, having those two as really role models for getting involved in your community certainly, you know, made me excited to do local politics. And it will be probably no surprise to anyone to hear that Tess and I met working on the Hillary campaign. So I think we follow her lead in working toward getting more women to hopefully be in a position to run for office and continue to do so.
And I guess the question that is such a natural question to ask is how come you and Tess aren't running for office?
We've learned that we can never say never anymore. You know, I think we have a lot of work to do around the country. But yeah, Emily and I have agreed we will never say we will never run for office.
Oh, great. you're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter.
Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm here. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here today with Tess Rabin and Emily Blumberg, co-directors of First Ask. And as a relatively new organization, you need clients, and I don't mean clients who are going to run for office. That's maybe your product, but the client is would seem to be the feeder. You know, who's going to in a community that you don't really know going to recommend you? Is there such an organization? Are there organizations that are hooking up with you?
Yeah, so we, one of our partners is Emerge America. They train women to run for office. They have an amazing program. They have longer program. It's about 6 months. And then they also have a boot camp program where, women who are interested go in, they get the fundamentals, and really come out of this 100% ready to run for office. So we partner with them. We've partnered with Emily's List. We've partnered with the DLCC. So we have a lot of organizations that we can look to for advice, support, and teamwork, most of all.
And do you limit yourself now because you're small to a particular geographic location?
Definitely not.
Okay, so you'll go anywhere.
We'll go anywhere. We want to make sure, women are 22% of elected officials right now. We're 51% of the population. We are literally the most underrepresented majority in the country. So that is everywhere. And we want to make sure that we change that number, that 22%.
So how do you know that there's a community that has a woman or should have a woman? I mean, you're sitting there. It's 9 o'clock Monday morning. How do you begin the day? How do you decide, or how do you get information as to where you should spend your week?
That's a great question. So we look at it from a few different angles, especially because we're trying to recruit women from a lot of different angles of support. So we've taken a look at both state legislatures that are very close in representation, Democrat, Republican, and we're flipping a couple seats could make a huge difference. And then we also look at the gender representation within that. So actually, California is a great example, majorly Democratic, but the gender representation isn't equal. And so that would actually be a state that we'd be interested in working in, even though you might not think of it as a swing state, for example. But we sort of take that combination and then we reach out to state parties and talk to them about their recruitment process, if and how we can be helpful in recruiting for seats where Democrats might not otherwise be running, and take a look there, because that's also a really great place to sort of ease the mind of women who might be considering running, is places where they might not start off with a primary. Certainly we recruit and support women where there would be a primary, but we take that into consideration. And then we really start to dig in there, see what networks we can tap into. We want to talk to, again, and recruit volunteers that live in the area and that they might be activists members of county parties, members of grassroots organizations. They might be former volunteers from presidential campaigns or from statewide campaigns, and we really want to talk to them and see who they think should run, and then we tap into those districts from there.
Does it make a difference that the gender of the person you're speaking to on that a local level, if it's a man, is he less receptive, or it makes no difference?
Doesn't make a difference to us.
No, not to you, but to him. I mean, do you have a better sales rate when you're talking to a woman as opposed to a political leader in a community that's a male?
That's a great question. Experience-wise, anecdotally, it actually doesn't make a huge difference. Of course, when we think about who's involved and who are in positions of power, more often than not, the county party chair or the state party or something like that are often men. So, those who have been really, really helpful to us have been men. We have seen a really cool enthusiasm and actually a connection often to grassroots organizations that are specific to women among the women that we talk to. So I think the way I want to answer that is we've had men be incredibly helpful, and I think women have been especially in tune with the mission that we're doing. So I'll say even more helpful, but we haven't exactly seen like an unhelpful from men.
What's LEAP, L-E-A-P?
That is our locally established advocates program. That's our volunteer network across the country that we are going to be really building out this summer. And that's this network of volunteers whose job it will be to really recruit women in their districts. And the idea being that this can be in as many districts as we can build out for future elections, because what we're seeing is, especially when you look at this year, this sort of 30-point swing in districts that were not otherwise competitive, that we really want eyes and ears in every community that we can. And that's our program of advocates to train them on how to look for these women, sort of develop a sense of which women in communities are great to ask to run for office, and then really equipping them with the resources to have those conversations to say, hey, I think you'd be great at running for office. Here's who else would be supportive of you. Here's what that might look like. Here's how we can help.
Who's Melissa Dart?
So Melissa Dart is one of the first ask candidates that ran in Virginia in 2017. She went through the Emerge program and ran a phenomenal campaign. She did not end up winning, but she is actually going to be running again in the next election in Virginia.
And Hala Ayala?
Hala Ayala. Yeah, Hala Ayala is somebody who had been asked a million times to run for office. And finally, first asked her, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. She ended up winning her district. And earlier this week, she actually voted on a bill to pass Medicaid in Virginia, which is really, really exciting.
Speaking of Virginia, there was a win this year by a transgendered woman.
Yeah.
Which is opens the door.
Yeah, Danica Rome is she's a phenomenal candidate, and she ran a great campaign.
And one of the things that's interesting about that, you talk about women and some of the issues that women may have in terms of running. What apparently she ran on is the issue. She didn't even discuss her gender issues, and it proved in a way that people really do care, at least on the local level, about issues rather than who you are.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. She wanted to run to fix Route 28.
Right.
Her opponent, who was the incumbent, was one of the worst outspoken against transgender rights and the LGBTQ community. And the community had voted for him in the past, and they didn't care because he wasn't the right person for those issues. And she absolutely, Danica was a reporter for a long time. She knew the ins and outs of issues incredibly, and people responded really well to it.
How does it look for this year, you think? This is a big year for a whole host of reasons, which we don't need to repeat. But how does it look, both from the standpoint of having women run and also taking back the House?
We're incredibly excited.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Des.
No, there are more women running than, there have been in a really long time. That being said, we're still not at 50%. But I think what will make this year different is people actually going out and voting. That's what made the difference in Virginia, is that people voted in presidential numbers. And that's what we're looking for in 2018 is those same numbers coming out and more people participating in their government.
And I guess one of the fears that some have is that in states like California, where it's the first two in the primary wins, that you could end up competing with so many Democrats running that you'll end up with two Republicans running. So I guess there's got to be some coordination somewhere along the line to make sure that people don't shoot themselves in the foot.
Definitely. I hope so. I know that a lot of candidates are in close communication with each other, which is really great and really helpful because, you know, when it comes down to it, Democrats are all on the same side. And, you know, one may be better than the other depending on the person you ask. But I think the important part is the way to take back Congress is definitely through California.
I guess one of the things that which is a high-quality problem if it comes to it. If you have 50 candidates running in 38 different states, where are you going to go election night? That's a high-quality problem.
That is a high-quality problem. Right now, we're trying to make sure that in the fall, we can go to every single one of our candidates and knock doors for them. Like Emily said, that's one of our favorite things to do is knocking doors for candidates we love and appreciate. So that's our goal right now. Even thinking about 2018 election night kind of puts butterflies in my stomach right now.
Well, you know, I have to give you credit. There is nothing more humbling than having someone to slam a door in your face.
Definitely.
So the fact that you guys enjoy that, that's a whole other show.
Definitely.
You're listening to AHA Presents on AM 1290, and believe it or not, we'll be back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tess Rabin and Emily Blumberg, co-directors of First Ask. And I'm so happy they took the hour to be with us because they have 48 states they have to go to in the next 3 days. You're going to get a lot of frequent flyer miles.
So I
guess you're both not zillionaires. So how do we help you?
You know, the best thing that people can do right now is donate. Firstask.org. You can click donate. We need money to be able to recruit these women. We want to be able to call up our candidates and say, hey, do you need to open a bank account? Yeah, you need $500 for that. Here you go. Go open a bank account so you can start raising money. We need to have the resources to be able to do that. We want to go, you know, be able to knock doors for them and give them all of the tools they need. And like it or not, that takes money.
And it takes volunteers, too. So you don't need to have money to help you.
Definitely not. Sign up for our LEAP program. Again, that's on our website as well. If you know people in your community who should be running, or if you want to be trained to be a scout for that, that is our LEAP program, and it's completely volunteer run. We want to train. We know from being organizers and traveling around the country and being dropped in the middle of nowhere that communities know what's best for their own community. We know that we are outsiders, so we want to make sure that we're empowering people within their own friends and family to lift them up and make sure that we can recruit the right women to run.
And do you accept interns?
Absolutely. We will start an intern program this fall. We have internships in fundraising, social media, communications, organizing. Emily and I have both had a lot of internships, so we feel pretty confident that our internship will be a huge learning experience.
And is there one spot that when we're watching the elections in November, we should be focused on that would be give us some indication that we don't have to stay up all night?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Emily, what do you think?
Well, you got us there. There are a lot of exciting places. I think these districts that we're seeing within this 30-point margin, if you pick a couple of them and look at how they're doing, I think that will be a good indication, certainly statewide for us, because that's really this national trend that we've been seeing is these enormous swings, but in places that maybe don't normally get all the party attention. So I think we'll probably pick all of our candidates to be watching for that trend.
You know what's really nice? You know, a lot of the protests among college kids, particularly post-Vietnam, was about negative things. It was about what they don't like. You know, we don't want a tuition hike. We don't want this. We don't want that. One of the things that, well, not one of the things, a major thing that you're doing, it's all positive. You're looking to, not to protest, but to work in the system to make change so that the system works. And I think, that's something that I think more and more people should do. And it's very hard to do because the world is so nasty out there. There are people now, there was an article, very depressing article yesterday in the Washington Post that said that the enthusiasm gap, whatever that means, between the Democrats and Republicans is getting narrower. I'm not sure why, but maybe people are just tired of listening to those tweets. But one of the things that you have to do, we have to all do, is to make sure people don't get bored or get frustrated or get tired, because it's about keeping the energy up to do something.
Absolutely. And that's, part of what we want to do is we want to capitalize on the Women's March movement and all of these other great activist movements and make sure that it doesn't die out after 2018, that it actually keeps going into 2019, 2020, 2022, and that this enthusiasm, stays strong. And that's, that's one of our ultimate goals, is to make sure that we can continue this progress. And, 2018 isn't just an anomaly with, a bunch of women running, that every year we can grow that number.
Yeah, and I just got a text from my wife, and she wanted me, this is the lawyer in her, to divulge that we are already a donor.
Yes,
so
you are.
I am prejudiced, so I have to reveal that, don't I, Richard?
You must recuse yourself.
Yes, I must recuse. I have to recuse myself from this conversation. Is it too late to we only have 30 seconds left. Is it too late to recuse myself?
We're very appreciative of it, and you enable us to do these positive things. Yeah. I mean, we're so excited about, putting all of this into action.
Well, you guys are great, and the only disappointment I have that I can't vote for either of you. So let me know who to vote for, and I will vote multiple times for that person.
Oh, there you go.
Isn't that the expression, vote early and vote often?
Vote early and vote.
Unfortunately.
Yep.
Right. Well, you said you were from Chicago, didn't you?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, thanks. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you, Tess Rabin, Emily Blumberg. I wish there were more kids like you. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. It's 3